Good evening. I'd like to call this meeting to order of the joint meeting of the Reedley City Council and the successor agency to the former Reedley Redevelopment Agency. The invocation this evening will be done by Joel Kersey, a pastor of our student ministries at Reedley MB Church, and he's accompanied by his daughter Zoe. Welcome, Zoe. And the Pledge of Allegiance this evening, I'll ask Councilman Soleno if he would do that, please.
Yes, that would no problem.
Okay, would you all rise?
God, we thank you tonight for the men and women who serve our country and our city in leadership roles and for their families. Please provide for our leaders with reminders each day of why they dedicate their lives to public service and use that commitment to encourage them. Give them peace when their work takes them away from their families, God. And we also pray specifically for their spouses and their children. We ask that you would draw near to them and give them wisdom on how to best support one another while their loved one is away working. We thank you also tonight, Father, for any men and women in this room who have served in our military, and we pray for your blessing on their lives for the sacrifice they have made for us to maintain our freedoms here. We pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen. Amen.
Ladies and gentlemen, would you please join the council and salute your flag?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you.
May I have the roll call?
Councilmember Beck.
Here. Here.
Councilmember Betancourt.
Here.
Councilmember Soleno.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Fast.
Here.
Mayor Pinion is not here today with an excuse of absence.
Okay, under agenda approval, are there any additions and or deletions to the agenda this evening?
Mayor Pro Tem, staff would like to announce that on item number 14, which is our first public hearing of the night, we will be asking council to consider item A, and then we will be asking council to continue item B to our December 10th meeting. And we will remind the council when we get to that part of the agenda.
Okay. Public comment.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'll make a motion.
Oh, second. I'm sorry.
Second.
Call for the question.
Councilmember Betancourt?
Yes.
Councilmember Soleno?
Yes.
Councilmember Beck?
Yes. Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Fast.
Yes. Thank you. Correct me if I don't do what I'm supposed to tonight. Please. Public comment provides an opportunity for members of the public to address the City Council on items of interest to the public within the Council's jurisdiction and which are not already on the agenda this evening. It is the policy of the Council not to answer questions impromptu. Concerns or complaints will be referred to the City Manager's office. Speakers should limit their comments to not more than 3 minutes. No more than 10 minutes per issue will be allowed. For items which are on the agenda this evening, members of the public will be provided an opportunity to address the council as each item is brought up for discussion. The consent agenda items are considered routine in nature and voted upon as...
Hold on. Ask for any public comment first.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Sorry.
Okay. Is there any public comment? The consent agenda items are considered routine in nature and voted upon as one item. Under a consent agenda category, a recommended course of action for each item is made. Any council member may remove any item from the consent agenda in order to discuss and or change the recommended course of action, and the council can approve the remainder of the consent agenda. A council member's vote in favor of the consent agenda is considered and recorded as a separate affirmative vote in favor of each action listed. Motions in favor of the consent agenda are deemed to include a motion to waive the full reading of any ordinance on the consent agenda. For adoption of ordinances, only those that have received a unanimous vote upon introduction are considered consent items. Would anyone like to remove? We have a large list of consent items tonight. Would anybody like to remove any of those?
No.
Would anybody in the public want to speak on any of the items in the consent agenda? Okay, I'd like to pull item 3, item 6, and item 12.
I'll make a motion to approve the other items.
Second.
Councilmember Betancourt?
Yes.
Councilmember Salino?
Yes.
Councilmember Beck?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Fast?
Yes. Okay, item 3. Approve and authorize the city manager to sign the Reedley Opera House use agreement with River City Theater Company for a 5-year term.
Good evening. I'm here to answer any questions you may have.
Okay, just a couple of questions that I had. So can you briefly tell me a little bit about what has changed in this new agreement?
Yes. So River City is going to become responsible for the water and sewer fees associated with the building. Up to this point, the city has covered those. They have requested the ability to have more than 10 of the allotted activities that they can do outside of their theater stuff. And so a big part of the city subsidizes electricity. So we have agreed upon putting a cap on the electricity and natural gas. So anything that goes over what we've seen the last 3 years, they will be responsible for the increased use that they have. We also have put dates on when their reports are due. We've struggled a little bit in transition of board members and stuff to get consistent reports to the council. So we've identified those in the agreement to make it very clear to when we can expect those. And then the monthly rent, we're going to keep it the same for this year, but have asked for a $50 increase after the first year because we'd like to see that amount go up a little bit. But with them taking on the sewer and water rate of $200, a little over $200, we felt like getting used to that for a year would be good, and then increase it going into the second year and the expiration of the 5-year agreement.
Okay, so the rent will go up $50 a year or
$50 a month. Sorry if I misspoke. $50 a month.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. And then that will be for the next 4 years.
Correct.
Okay. 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 That's the only question I had. Any of the council have any other questions?
Sarah, this is something I talked to the city manager in her memo, was that they were proposing to try and buy the Opera House from the city.
The question has come up, correct. And so we are looking into that. River City is considering it as well. And then we will come back together if both would like to talk about it further. At this time, we thought it was good with the agreement expiring to go ahead and move this forward while that is still being considered and talked about.
So in the future, we'll have information as to what the negatives and the positives, if it's sold to the theater?
If that's the direction we go, correct.
Yeah, and there, I did mention this to Mr. Salino yesterday when we met. There is a grant deed restriction, so regardless of what happens in terms of ownership, and there's a long road to go down, whoever owns that building must retain it as a theater or public theater house, opera house. So, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
So they're going to add more productions then? They'd like to?
They have asked to bring in private events to help with increasing their revenue. And so that's what those additional events are they were asking to host.
Well, I know that it says that we're going to need an air conditioning unit and a walk-in refrigerator in the next 5 years. Those are two real expensive items. Mm-hmm. Isn't the wear and tear on that with more events just going to make it happen sooner or?
I don't know. They've asked about unplugging the walk-in, and we've advised them against that because when they're not having events, it's still running. So I don't think necessarily the walk-in. Of course, there's multiple air conditioning units on that building, but we've identified one and probably another one that's not far behind it. I think that's just with the age of the units. Of course, they'll be used a little more often, but we're going to try to capture that with the electrical cost and putting a cap on that. Yeah.
You know, one of the things that we have to remember that the Opera House is one of the major items in the city of Reedley that attracts individuals from outside that come into Reedley.
Mm-hmm.
That's very true. That's a good plus for us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It is.
So we can try and work with them as much as we can.
And I will say I appreciate they've had some changes on their board. They've done a phenomenal job just kind of addressing some of the concerns we had in the building, kind of cleaning it up a little bit, being very attentive. So I appreciate them working with us on this. They were very quick to respond. So I see good things happening. So I'm very happy for them and where they're going.
Any other questions from the council? Any questions from the public on this issue? Seeing none, can I entertain a motion?
Motion.
Second.
Call for the question.
Councilmember Beck?
Yes.
Councilmember Salino?
Yes.
Councilmember Bettencourt?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Fast?
Yes. Okay, moving on to item 6. Approve and authorize the city manager to sign an agreement with the County of Fresno for continued participation in the Fresno County Adult Compliance Team Act.
Good evening. Joe Garza, Chief of Police, here to answer any questions you may have.
Okay. Well, I just want to say I think this is an important group for us to be a part of for our county. I think it serves Reedley very well, and I would like to see this continue. I did see in the impact at the end of the fiscal impact that right now we don't have an officer currently on that team, but I was wondering why there's no one on that team and when that will be filled.
Due to staffing shortages, obviously we have to manage our city first, and this is an officer that's assigned to this task force that's out of town. So we have to ensure that we have sufficient officers here in town. So we had to pull that officer temporarily so he can train as well. We currently have 4 officers in training. And with an anticipated release date, we're hoping with most of them by at least December. So we're kind of hoping shortly after the first of the year we'll be able to assign an officer there. But regardless of whether we have an officer there or not, we do still have contact with the ACT team, and they do come into town periodically at our request. So it's not a connection that we have lost because we don't have somebody on that team.
Okay. Yeah, I understand that. Any other questions from the council?
Well, you know, this is an important item as far as I'm concerned. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm looking at the information we have between the parolees and the supervised. You know, we have 122 individuals between this Orange Cove, Reedley, and Parlier. That's a lot of individuals. And this officer, when we can afford to put it on, it's going to be very important to the city of Reedley. So hopefully in the future, it'll put a little bind on staff to come up with those kind of funds, but we just have to hold back and wait and see if we can do it later on.
You know, and the fortunate thing, Councilman Salino, is that the officer that was in ACT is obviously here in town now, and because he's still connected with the ACT team, they're still going out and doing compliance checks like they would normally in between calls for service. So that is something that we still continue to do because they do have to be monitored and we have to ensure that they are where they're supposed to be at and stuff. So that is something that we have not allowed to lapse because we don't have an officer on that team.
Right. But the actions that this group has taken in the past is very important to
absolutely they are.
Yeah. So, thank you.
I only have one question about this, and it's regarding out of the AB 109 people that you're checking on, do you guys keep stats on how many of those people don't have a fixed address or are homeless?
Really?
I believe that the county does have that number. I don't have it off the top of my head, but there are several of them that would be, in essence, some of them are attached to the Poverello House in Fresno. It's not really their home, but that's their residence of their address of residency. So there are some that are homeless. Now, the folks that are homeless in Reedley, we know those are not part of the AB 109.
That's kind of what I was concerned. How many of ours that do we have control of here that we're losing control because of this?
Yeah, to this point, we have none.
Good.
All of our folks are accounted for.
Any other council comments?
You know, I don't know if I want to bring this up, and it just bothers me. We know that we have at least 46 in our city alone. And do we want to know the information of where they're at? That's a question that people have asked before. Does the city show us where they're at? Do I have one next door to me?
I see what you're saying. The public has a right to know.
Yes.
I think as of right now, only Megan's Law, as in sex registrants, are publicly outed, so to speak, on a website. So
at least it's a question. At least we have something to a response to the public if they want to ask a question.
Mm-hmm. And so I think the appropriate response would be right now, just parolees and probationers have a right to not be published in that realm, but sex offenders and sex registrants are clearly available.
Okay, good. That's all I wanted to know. Thank you.
Is there any other council comments? Any comments from the public on this issue? Thank you, Chief.
I don't have a motion.
A second?
I apologize. Who did the second?
Anita made the motion.
Second.
Councilmember Betancourt?
Yes.
Councilmember Beck?
Yes.
Councilmember
Salino?
Yes.
Mayor
Pro Tem Beck? Yes. Moving on to item number 12, adopt resolution number 2019-104, amending the fiscal year 2019-20 adopted budget to appropriate sufficient funds to cover additional costs for design and engineering services for the replacement of the sewer trunk pipeline from Reed Avenue to the wastewater treatment plant.
Yeah, good evening. Be happy to answer any questions you may have on this item.
Okay. My question on this item was when we had the overflow a couple of years ago by Emmanuel there on Reed Avenue, didn't we do part of this?
We did not. That project included the intersection of Reed and Olson, heading south, just past Emmanuel. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, south, just past about halfway through the cemetery, and then heading north, just past Emmanuel High School. We did one little stub out heading toward the bridge. So when we did this project, we don't have to go back into the manhole in the intersection. So
because I knew there was a big work down there.
That wasn't part of the collapse, but we wanted to be. We wanted to do that stub so we wouldn't have to go back in the intersection, cause the disruption again.
Okay, so this will go under the bridge and then all the way to the ponds out there?
Yes, it will actually start at the stub out that we had from the intersection of Reed and Olson. It will go, the pipe currently goes in a casing that's attached to the side of the bridge. So that pipe will be removed. And then on the other side of the bridge, it goes back down in the ground, and it'll go all the way to the wastewater treatment plant. Through the dirt area on the west side of Cricket Hollow.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
Russ, you're saying it's going to go through the dirt area?
Correct.
And how? I'm just thinking, because we're... In the past, we always talked about some kind of a project on that area. Now, when this pipe goes in, will it be deep enough that it won't interfere or cause any problems?
Yes, this pipe will be very deep. It will be the deepest pipe within the city of Reedley because this is everything gravity flows to that location. So you're looking at depths of 16 feet of low ground. The current pipe does go through the asphalt roadway that's by Cricket Hollow, and it has a really big belly in it. It acts kind of as a siphon, so we're getting rid of that problem. That's been a problem for us for years, many years. So we're going to take it a little further west, go through the dirt area. It's going to be very deep and shouldn't affect any plans for the future there.
Because that dirt area was talked about years ago of a positive projects that could happen there, and which maybe in the future could happen, but I was just wondering how deep that pipe would be.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, thank you.
Sure.
Russ, is this going to be an increase in size also?
It is. Yeah, that's why a lot of this evaluation was done. We segmented the flows of a large portion of the city to make sure that we had exactly the right size for now and in the future. We don't foresee doing this for another 80 years. You know. knock on wood.
My question was, is you said this goes in a casing underneath the bridge. Is that casing right now currently big enough that it will take the new increase in size, or is that all going to have to be changed?
Yeah, currently the casing is large enough, oddly enough, because the slope that you have from the intersection of Reed and Olson, there's such a slope going down and across the bridge that a smaller pipe can handle more volume because the water's rushing through there fairly quickly. Yeah, so the casing is large enough. The pipe inside the casing will have to be replaced.
Any other comments from the council? And any comments from the public on this issue? See none. We'll entertain a motion.
Motion.
Second.
Call for the question.
Councilmember Graff?
Yes.
Councilmember Cellino?
Yes.
Councilmember Betancourt?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Fass?
Yes. Okay. Item 14 is a public hearing, and I'll read about ordinance. With respect to the approval of ordinances, the reading of the title thereto shall be deemed a motion to waive a reading of the complete ordinance, and unless there is a question request by a council member that the ordinance be read in full, further reading of the ordinance shall be deemed waived by unanimous consent of the council. So, item 14. Consider action related to annexation of territory, annexation number 16 to the City of Reedley Community Facilities District 2005-1 for public services, which includes the following. Item A, adopt resolution number 2019-098, a resolution of the City Council of the City of Reedley of annexation of territory to the City of Reedley Community Facilities District number 2005-1. Public services, authorizing the levy of a special tax and submitting the question of levying a special tax within the area proposed to be annexed to qualified electors, annexation number 16. And my understanding is item B we will be postponing to our next meeting. And so I'll turn it over to Mr. Malikian.
Thank you very much. Good evening, Mayor Pro Tem and City Council. this is the second step in what is typically an annual annexation process for the city's community facilities district since the requirement to annex into the CFD was imposed on all new development processed after November 2005. Several property owners have submitted petitions to annex into the CFD, and which is subject to the conditions on the development of their property. The City Council approved a resolution of intention for this annexation number 16 on October 8th, 2019. The resolution of intention set a public hearing date for today, November 12th. The purpose of the public hearing tonight is to take public comment on the annexation of territory into the CFD and to accept protests from any property owner within the proposed boundaries. If no property owner protests are received, the council may take initial action to annex territory to the CFD by approving the first resolution. And as the city manager had discussed the first part of the meeting, we are proposing to request a continuance to the December 10th, 2019 council meeting for the actual election process. And this continuation is to give all of the property owners sufficient time to submit a ballot for the election process. And that concludes my presentation tonight.
So no action tonight?
Just on item A.
So are there any questions from the council on specifically just item A? No comments from the council. I'll open the public hearing. And the public hearing is now open for comments. Any person from the public would like to comment on this item 14A? Seeing none, I'll close the public hearing and call for motion on just item A.
So moved.
Second.
Call for the question.
Councilmember Cellino?
Yes.
Councilmember Betancourt?
Yes.
Councilmember Beck?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Fass?
Yes.
And Mayor Pro Tem, I would ask if we can have a formal motion, second, and vote on continuing item B to December 10th.
Okay.
So moved.
Second.
Councilmember Salino?
Yes.
Councilmember Beck?
Yes.
Councilmember Betancourt?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Bass?
Yes.
Thank you, Council.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Item 15, introduction and first reading of ordinance number 2019-009, an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Reedley amending section 4-1-6 and amending various provisions of chapter 1 and chapter 4 of title 8 of the Reedley Municipal Code pertaining to water system regulations. And who's going to be taking this?
That's going to be our assistant city manager, I believe.
Oh, okay.
This is a co-authored item with Public Works Director. We do have a brief PowerPoint presentation tonight. This project initially started out as a review of our city ordinance to see what revisions were necessary to implement SB 998, the Water Shutoff Protection Act, signed into law last year and going into effect February 1st, 2020. The council received a presentation, on August 27th, the council received a briefing on SB 998. And it requires all public water systems with more than 200 service connections, which of course is the city, and that we have over 6,000. So we fall into the applicability of the law, that we provide certain notices and options be given to customers before their residential water service may be terminated for non-payment. The effective date is in February, and commercial service accounts are not affected by this law. Although the city has more lenient shutoff practices than many of our nearby communities in the valley, there are still some changes required to our utility billing system and to our city ordinances to make sure that we're that we can continue to operate our system and also be in accordance with the new law. So I did mention that our shutoff practices are more lenient than most cities around us. So under SB 998, the residential accounts must be at least 60 days in a delinquent status before their service is discontinued. 60 days late, and then there are additional notices that are required to be given to the property owner, as well as the person on the bill of record, the person on the bill. A slight modification is necessary to ensure that our current shutoff can still occur, but be compliant with the law. Our city utility bill, in fact, I'm getting ahead of myself a little bit here. Let me get to the slides. Working. Can you advance to the next slide? For some reason, it's not coming on. Thank you. So we need to provide clarity and consistency for our city's water system, and then we can go into the next slide too. Sorry, we're getting thrown off here a little bit without the clicker. So these are the three sections of the ordinance, and that's because of the three utilities that the city provides: water, wastewater, and solid waste. The late date for the bill is actually in the ordinance three times, and one has it as the 13th of the month, and two have it as the 15th of the month. The city's been in alignment with this, and that we treat the 15th of the month as the due date of the bill. So what we're proposing to do is to move that up to the 6th of the month. So our current practice is to perform a service shutoff approximately 2.5 months after the account becomes past due or delinquent. If we do not move our due date back, then we won't be shutting off the account till approximately 3 months after the account becomes past due. And that's because of the additional noticing that is required of the city before the physical service termination can occur. If we leave the due date as is on the 15th, it will have a negative financial impact on the enterprise accounts on the city because our current security deposit that we have on file with non-property owners is about 3 months of charges. And if we, if the service is not disconnected at the point of about 2.5 months, the city risks providing service that exceeds the value of the security deposit. And we do have, this does occur. We have about 70 door hangers every month. So that is a real financial impact to the city if the security deposit is not adequate to cover the services provided. This change of moving up the due date from the 15th to the 6th will have no impact to a vast majority of our ratepayers, all of you here, as the late fees only apply after 60 days of non-payment. So, for example, the city utility bill going out on November 1st, or that has just gone out on November 1st, if you don't make a payment, let's say you're out of town, or you don't make your payment, or you lose your mail, something like that happens, and you don't make your payment for the whole month of November, nothing happens. The December bill goes out, and it's going to show that you haven't paid your November bill, but there's no late fees that are attached to the November bill yet. So let's say you do nothing the entire month of December. Let's say you're still out of town or you lost your mail again. The January bill that goes out January 1st or 2nd, if you don't make your payment on the November amount due, then in January after the 6th, then you will get a late fee on your account. So I didn't want anybody to come away from this thinking customers are only going to have 5 days to pay their bill. That is not the case. In fact, most people can just continue to treat the 15th as the due date and have it'll have no impact whatsoever on their account or the city. But if we don't move it back, then we won't be able to shut off the account until about 3 months or even longer, depending upon when the notices fall on because of business days and holidays and that sort of thing. So we are requesting this slight modification that all bills will become past due after the 6th month. And I think that's it for SB 998. Is there any questions on this particular segment before our Public Works Director comes up for his portion of the thing?
Paul, when is this going to start taking place? What date is this going to be implemented? And the effective how soon do we start giving the public notice of what's going to take place?
January 10th. If we adopt it on December 10th, it'll be 30 days after that. So the ordinance would be effective January 9th or January 10th.
January 10th. So it would become effective for all practical purposes on February 1st, okay, which is the effective date of the state law, SB 998. Okay, so as far as getting the word out to our customers, we will be bringing some new policies forward in January that are required to implement this new law. The new policies will have our new shutoff policy in there that complies with the new state law. This new policy will be printed on the back of the bill. That's also required by the law, and we're going to be putting it in at least two languages, if not more, also required by the law. So we're going to be doing quite a bit of outreach just in the back of the bill, people getting it. But like I said, the vast majority of our ratepayers will not be impacted whatsoever. It's those folks who are repeatedly past due and delinquent. They actually won't be impacted by this at all because we'll be shutting off their water at the same time that they would have gotten shut off before. But they will actually be getting more notices than they are currently. So they'll have more opportunities to pay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, so I have a question. So November bill, what is it going to say on the new bill? When is that first month's bill due?
If this goes into effect February 1st billing cycle, it'll go out on the 1st, it'll be due on the 6th. But if you don't pay by the 6th, it's the same as it is currently. Our current due date is the 15th. If you don't pay by the 15th, there is no impact to you as a ratepayer. You can go one, two billing cycles, and then on the third billing cycle is when late fees apply.
Okay. So my next question is, okay, let's say November, I get my bill, but I don't pay it till like the 26th or the 27th. What? So then I get the new bill, and it shows I have two bills due. So when do you? When is your cutoff date usually? What day of the month that you do your new billing?
It's usually a couple days before the bills go out is when the system is updated.
Yeah.
So if they happen to fall in that little gap of time, if the customer comes in and they say, I'm showing two bills being paid, mm-hmm. our system's going to be updated to reflect that they've already paid online. We also encourage our customers not to wait for their bill and come in. We have the auto pay setup, which works really well. You set up and the system debits the money out of your bank account every month. And people don't want to give up that amount of control sometimes. I get it. They can also pay through their mobile banking app. If they get their bill, they can pay through their banking app. They can go pay online, one-time payment. So we have actually five different ways they can pay their bill. But as far as if they happen to get their statement after they've paid, then either they'll know that they've paid or they can call us and we'll tell them.
Okay. Because when I looked at this and I read this at first, I thought, okay, so you're going to, on the first, I'm going to get my bill the first or the second, and it's due on the sixth. And it's like, no, that's not going to work. But I understand kind of what you're trying to do. So you're trying to make it so that by like the 15th or the 20th of that third month, you're going to be shutting off.
Correct, which is our current practice. It's about 2.5 months.
Yeah. Okay.
Currently, we give 2 days on the door hanger before service is actually shut off. The law is going to require us to give 5 days notice. Mm-hmm.
So how many do you average? I know you said, but I didn't.
It's about 70 a month or so.
Really? That many?
Yeah, out of 6,300 accounts.
Well, for door hangers.
Door hangers,
and then
correct.
Specifically how many shut-ups, or not specifically, but generally how many?
A dozen to 15, some months or more. And if it's, if we know the situation, we know the customer, we're doing everything we can to contact them before it happens. If it's a multi-unit, we definitely are making that extra effort. If it's a business, if it's a restaurant, we're doing everything we can to outreach to those customers. Find somebody who has a phone number.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. Thank you. Any other questions from the council?
And then we have
the only thing I have is it's just another way of the state sticking their nose in the city's business again.
This is a very invasive law.
Yeah, and it's that we've got to decide what we're going to do about the state somewhere along the line.
And
good luck.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I've always said,
Russ, I've got them warned.
They run the they run the city, not us.
Right.
Okay, so moving on. The remainder of the changes that staff is proposing in Title 8 start in Section 8-1-1, which is the city water system. And it was last updated in 1914, so
oh my goodness.
Updated may be the inappropriate word. It could be original language that we're looking at. Yeah, so we are not deleting any of that original language. It still applies today, but we are having to look at adding some clarifying language. Some of the language is about non-liability of the city. The city not responsible or liable for any loss or damage due to water quality, water shortage, or water pressure. Also, service interruption. The city reserves the right to shut off water service for maintenance, emergency repair, or public health and safety. And as reasonably practical, the city will attempt to provide advance notice to water users affected by the service interruption. So there's quite a few changes. I'm going to go through them fairly quickly, but if you have a question, please stop me and feel free to ask. Section 8-1-3, mandatory connection required. We wanted to add some clarifying language to this article, providing clarification to the city's mandatory water connection requirement. Specifically, any building adjacent, and that's any building adjacent to a city water main, must apply for water service connection. Now, also in that article, Article C does provide relief from this requirement if the city council determines that special circumstances make the connection an unreasonable hardship on a property owner. So there is some outs if council does allow so. Section 8-1-6, That article is about water meters. That was last updated in 1981, so it was updated prior to the state mandating water meters for every water service. So a lot of that language really didn't apply. The old language says that somebody may choose to be billed from a water meter, or somebody may choose a flat rate. Obviously, that doesn't apply since the state mandated water meters. So we are updating the language there to cover current state requirements, also some specifics about water meters, such as locations, brands, and sizes of water meters to be used, and also the responsibility of water meters within a private or gated community. And I'll be talking about that specifically within a couple slides here.
Russ, can I ask a question?
Yes.
You're talking about water meters. I know that we've changed the water meters. We had some problems with one company and trying to get another one. Have we corrected all the water meters in the city of Reed Lake with all the problems that we've had?
Well, we did put new radios on the water meters. Those, however, we've also had a failure rate on those new radios. As meters have failed, though, we are replacing them with a different brand of water meter that has proven to be very successful. We've had a very low failure rate with those new meters. So these meters are already almost 10 years old, maybe a little, no, older than that. They're about 13 years old. So they are starting to fail. They're ending their lifespan. And as those meters fail, we're taking this other brand of meter and putting it in and not using the old brand. And that so far has proven to be very successful. We've had very few failures with the new brand.
How do you determine that it's failure?
They stop working. They won't misread. They won't. It's an impeller. When they fail, they absolutely stop working. So there's zero read. Okay. When they fail, yeah. It's not that they slow down. They don't slow down. They don't speed up. They quit.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Sure. Section 8-1-10, inspection and enforcement. This is also a section that was last updated in 1914. So we felt we needed to update the definition of the authority to enter private property for the purpose of reading or repairing the city's water meters and water system components. Believe it or not, we do have water meters that are located on private property. They may be just two steps off the sidewalk, but what we have found is residents may elect to put a front fence in their front yard, and then we then have to go through a gate or somehow enter their front yard. So we do need that authority to get in to read our water meter or repair it. Also, authority to shut off water service if water is disposed or used in violation of any law. Section 8-1-11, unlawful interference, and that we propose some language to update that to include specific language about vandalism, tampering, or destroying any part of the water system. Again, with the mandate to install water meters. Water meters are on every household. They are there at the surface level for somebody to tamper with or vandalize. So we wanted to get language in there specifically about that being prohibited. Also prohibits turning on the water supply where the service has been turned off due to non-payment or violation of city ordinance. Section 8-1-13-2. Just a small change in the definitions under customer's water system. Just wanted to clarify exactly what that definition meant. Not really big change there. Section 8-1-13-4 under requirements added additional language to provide a more detailed and updated description of the customer's system. Also a description of the customer's system in a private or gated community. And we also wanted to add clarifying language there about private fire service lines. So I wanted to talk about that one specifically, if I may, just briefly, because that is probably one of the bigger changes that we're making this evening. The current language in the ordinance does call for, here's the city's water main, kind of a makeshift diagram here. Here's the city's water main. The way the ordinance currently reads is that the customer is responsible for the service line from the water main all the way to the household. So that would be the customer's responsibility. What we're changing this evening with the, proposing to change with the additional language is that because we now have a water meter that is the city's responsibility, the city will now assume responsibility for the customer's service line starting at the main. And so this light blue will be the city's responsibility. The customer will be responsible for the service line going to their home on the customer's side of the water meter. So a little bit of change there. The city is taking on a little bit more responsibility. This is typically under a roadway, as you know, so that is being proposed in this section. Now, gated communities will stay as the ordinance is currently written, and there's a couple of reasons for that. In a gated community, where there's a gate, you'll have your water main, a service tie-in, and right away you'll have a gate and some private roadways, driveways, what have you. In a gated community, the water meter is still situated in front of every home. So it really doesn't make any sense for the city to be responsible for the city water service line to the water meter. That would make us responsible for service lines that are under private roads, through private areas, on private property. So this would remain the same for gated private communities, that their responsibility would start at the water main and run all the way to the household. However, the city will maintain responsibility for upkeep and maintenance of the water meter. So we will always be responsible for the water meter. Should it fail, we will replace it. But that's a change being proposed this evening as well. Or really, it's just keeping the current language in place for the gated and private communities. Be happy to answer any questions. I know that was fairly quick and a lot to mull over, but fairly straightforward.
The city used to open their water hydrants and clear the lines up because people were complaining about fragments in their lines. And we haven't done that in quite a few years.
We do have a hydrant flushing program. We kind of know where our dead ends are and our problems are.
Right.
When we flush the hydrants, we get hordes of phone calls and complaints, specifically during drought years. You're telling us we can only water certain days, but you know, a lot of people don't quite understand the reason for needing to flush those lines out. So we haven't been flushing the whole city, kind of like we used to in the past, due to water conservation efforts, and we do have to report all of our water used to the state. But we do know where our problem areas, and we continue to flush those problem areas to ensure water quality.
They can complain, but when they start having particles in their lines,
mm-hmm.
they get upset.
Yes.
And you're trying to clean those problems.
Correct.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, for the most part, our water circulates pretty well. But we do have areas in town where we have some dead ends and some issues that we flush regularly.
Okay. All right, good.
Any other questions from the council?
No.
Are there any questions? Excuse me. Are there any other questions from the public on this issue? Seeing none,
it is noticed as a public hearing, so just technically if you could open a public hearing.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I'll open up to a public hearing. Is there any public comment on this issue? Seeing none, I'll close the public hearing.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Move to approve.
Second.
Call for the question.
Councilmember Salinas?
Yes.
Councilmember Bettencourt?
Yes.
Councilmember Beck?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Fass?
Yes. Okay. Item 16, the introduction and waive first reading of Ordinance 2019-008, adoption of 2019 California Building Standards Code, and schedule public hearing to consider adoption of Ordinance 2019-008.
Good evening, Mayor Pro Tem and City Council. Jerry Isaac, Fire Chief. Before you tonight is basically a routine administrative item that we revisit every 3 years, and the last time was in December of 2016. The state of California adopted the new Title 24, which is California Code of Regulations, otherwise known as the Building Codes, on July 1st of this year. So every 3 years, the building codes expire when the new code is adopted by the state, and then the council needs to adopt the new codes. Building codes are developed and updated based on the history of disasters, tragedies, and misfortunes. With this code, the council has until January 1st to adopt it, along with any local amendments. And local amendments can be made to the state code as long as the building standards are increased or are stricter than the minimum level of standards in the code. So we do have a couple of amendments that we bring to the code, and these are being carried over from the previous code adoption cycles. One of them is the automatic sprinkler amendment, which changes the code here locally, requiring automatic sprinkler suppression systems in buildings 5,000 square feet and larger. The state code requires this for buildings that are 12,000 square feet and larger. So the proposed ordinance includes, you'll see in their exhibits 1 and 2, which is climatic data that satisfies findings and conditions which supports and justifies the code amendment for the more restrictive sprinkler requirement. In other words, it's hot here, and summertime conditions are conducive to the spread of fire, and the heat also takes a toll on our firefighters. So having a more restrictive automatic sprinkler ordinance makes sense for the safety of our community. And I'll just say that this amendment, this more restrictive amendment, has been a part of our code for the last 6 cycles, which is about 18 years. We include it. We have to revisit this every 3 years, and then we have to amend the state code to include this more restrictive amendment to the code. In regards to the amendments about the appeals board, the current state code states that local jurisdictions may establish a local appeals board. We would simply like the council to perform the role as the appeals board. We don't think the building department staff doesn't think they can find enough subject matter experts within the city to form a board. So what would happen is you folks become the appeals board and appoint a hearing examiner to investigate whatever the appeal is, and then listen to the hearing examiner and make your decision as the appeals board. And again, all of these amendments, the sprinkler code and the appeals board, are carried over from previous code adoption cycles. And I apologize for the lack of clarity on those exhibits. Those were the best I could print from the National Weather Service. Some of them are kind of fuzzy and don't make a whole lot of sense, but that's the best I could get from them. So anyway, this concludes my report, and staff recommends that the council approve the introduction and waive the first reading of Ordinance 2019-008, adopting the subject codes, and schedule a public hearing on December 10th, 2019, to consider adoption of the ordinance.
Okay, so I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
So where is Section 9-1-2? Is that supposed to be in here? In the report?
That is in our municipal code.
Okay, so I would have to look at that.
Right.
Okay. Because I would like to read through that. Okay. Any questions from the council? Any other questions on this issue? So basically, we're pulling in all of the new California codes, but we're adding this one on the sprinklers to be more strict than the state codes.
Right, and like I mentioned, we've been doing this for the last 6 code cycles. It's just that when the California code comes out, it doesn't include the more restrictive amendment that we would like to see in the code. So we have to, every 3 years, go through this process and make the amendments to the code that serve the city of Reedley.
That's good.
Okay. Any other comments from the council?
No.
Okay. So is this another public hearing or no?
Yeah. Apologize for any confusion. This is one that's different. The public hearing isn't required until the second.
Next time.
Yeah, the
okay.
Second one. So.
Okay. Okay. So is there any public comment on this issue? Seeing none, what is the council's pleasure?
Motion. Second.
Call for the question.
Councilmember Beck?
Yes.
Councilmember Salino?
Yes.
Councilmember Bettencourt?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Bass?
Yes. Item 17, adopt resolution number 2019-101 of the successor agency to the Reedley Redevelopment Agency approving the issuance of refunding bonds in order to refund certain outstanding bonds of the Reedley Redevelopment Agency approving the execution and delivery of an indenture trust and an escrow agreement and providing for other matters properly relating to thereto.
Mouthful.
Now explain that, please.
Sure, no problem. I'd be happy to. Thank you very much again, Mayor Pro Tem and City Council. It's been a while since we've had any business pertaining to the Redevelopment Agency in front of you. The agency got its last and final, I'll just call it a last and final approval from the Department of Finance several years ago, essentially allowing us to go on our way. We received that approval allowed us access to 45% of the remaining bond proceeds from the 2011 bonds. Unfortunately, per statute, 55% of those remaining bond project proceeds were frozen, and they continue to be frozen. And we are mandated by state law to use those proceeds. Must be used to retire the bonds or may be used as a source of funds to a refunding. And that is exactly what is before you tonight, or before the successor agency tonight, is a request to refund the remaining portion of the bonds and to use the 55% of our frozen bond proceeds, which we've held in an account, to buy back some of those bonds and to refinance the remaining portion of the bonds. We haven't done this up till now because the economics weren't there for the city, because we are just one of the taxing entities in the former redevelopment entity. Any savings from a refunding or a refinancing of the bonds, we only get a percentage of it. And in this case, it's 15.5% savings. So there really wasn't a lot of incentive to the city to go through all the effort and all the cost of doing this. However, due to the interest rate environment, so we're still in historically low interest rates, and due to the fact that we have about $2.9 million that we will never have an opportunity to do anything with. I think we were sort of holding out that there was some legislation. There was always whispers of a proposed bill or legislation that would allow us to use all of our bond proceeds for projects in the city. Mm-hmm. There was about 40 cities up and down the state, if I remember, that had these frozen bond proceeds. So there was some legislation churning at the time to try to get access to all those proceeds. None of the legislation ever panned out. So as a result, it's pretty clear now that there's not going to be any opportunity for us ever to use those bond proceeds for anything other than buying back some of these bonds. So because of the low interest rates and because of our of the frozen bond proceeds that now we're required to use to buy back some of those bonds, we have an opportunity to capture some significant savings in debt service to the tune of about $300,000 a year. So so the payment on the bonds every year, should this go through, based on today's interest rates and where we think the bonds are going to be sold at in the market, we think about $300,000 savings. Hmm. The city's share of that $300,000 would be about $46,000, $47,000 a year. And that would be in the form of higher property tax revenue to the general fund. And that would be an ongoing savings until the bonds are paid off in 2036. So what we're asking for your approval tonight is to proceed with the issuance of these bonds. And I'll just go through a few of the numbers here. In 2011, the Reedley Redevelopment Agency issued $8,275,000 of tax allocation bonds, and they were to refinance the city's then existing 1998 RDA bonds, and also to pull additional bond proceeds to basically to pull additional funds for redevelopment activities in the city. So the city got cash out of the deal as well as refinancing some old bonds. As of this writing of the report, about $7.3 million of the bonds are outstanding. The estimated amount that would be refunded would be about $4.8 million. And the reason for the difference, of course, is that the city would be kicking in $2.9 million to buy back some of the bonds, because we're required to by law. So we wouldn't be issuing as many bonds going forward, which is why the debt service savings are so great.
I don't quite understand the refunding, or how come. So we got $2.9 million, and now we're going to have to put it back into this so we can refinance it?
Correct. So the city got just over $5 million of bond proceeds in 2011 when they issued new bonds.
Okay.
So they refinanced some old bonds they had issued in 1998.
I remember that.
Then they sized up the bond issuance. This was just before I came aboard. Sized up the bond issuance, which is what a lot of agencies did. We were not the only ones, which is why the interest rate's not so great, because there was a huge flood in the market of cities trying to beat the clock, essentially, get these bond proceeds, capture that money, keep it locally. Well, the state passed some legislation that that froze those bond proceeds. So we were fortunate in that we're at least able to get access to 45% of that money. But the other 55% we're now required to essentially give back. And the only way to give that back is to use it to buy back some of those bonds that we issued. By the way, I neglected to introduce the guest here, Nikki Talman of Brandis Talman. They have been our bond underwriters for, I think, approaching 20 years. We've done a lot of deals with them. They've been a great partner for the city. Nikki is the president and CEO of the firm, and she's here tonight also to answer any questions that may come up of this deal in case I wasn't sufficient enough, which I'm starting to feel like I'm not doing a good job here. So
it's very confusing.
Yes.
Because,
I'm sorry.
Okay, so we have the money, but we can't spend it.
Correct. Frozen. It's on ice.
So give it all back and be done.
Essentially, and so the silver lining of this storm cloud is that we would get additional property tax increment back to the city, because that money would no longer be used for debt service on the bonds. So we would get savings going forward of between $46,000-$47,000. It could be a little bit more, but it'd be annual additional revenue to the general fund.
Okay.
We would also be reimbursed one-time issuance costs, so to reimburse us for our staff time, so there'd be a one-time payment coming to the city, which we didn't budget for this year, so that would be nice.
Okay.
There is one item I need to read into the record, if I may. Sorry, I thought it was complete. The resolution that was attached, that would be resolution 2019-101. Mm-hmm. On page 2 of the resolution, the second whereas on page 2, I'll wait for everybody to turn to it.
Oh.
The second whereas on page 2 needs to be restated. The city took an item before the county oversight board. The local oversight board was dissolved per state law, and all activities related to the oversight board were consolidated to a Fresno County Oversight Board. So there's 58 oversight boards in the state. The Fresno County has one. We took this item to them because they're required to approve it as well. We took a resolution to them. Unfortunately, the clerk to the oversight board made an oversight, for lack of a better term, and did not include the correct version of the resolution for the oversight board to approve, so they could not take action last week. They're going to be meeting next month on a special meeting for us. Therefore, the second whereas in the resolution is, if adopted tonight, needs to be restated to state, whereas the oversight board is expected to approve the successor agency undertaking the refunding proceedings related to the prior bonds and approve the issuance of the refunding bonds at its meeting on December 18th, 2019. The current language states that it was adopted on November 7th, and as I just stated, that action did not occur. We're going to be taking that forward. If it gets approved tonight, we'll be taking this forward on December 18th, 2019 to the County Oversight Board. So the time frame, if the council approves this item tonight, we will be moving forward to take a second item forward in December to this body to approve the several additional documents required to issue the bonds. And we are working towards issuing and selling the bonds in January or February. So we would start to see those savings as early as 2020. Nikki, would you like to add anything? Okay.
Paul, can I mention something? I mean, every time we talk about redevelopment, I mean, agency, it just, my blood boils.
Oh.
Remember when, before this issue of the politicians, it said some agencies are not spending the money wisely, that they wanted to do away with the redevelopment agency. Prior to that, it was very beneficial to all agencies. Isn't that right?
I will chime in and say not only was it beneficial to many agencies up and down California, but our Governor Brown, who did away with the redevelopment agencies, made his name by using redevelopment to redevelop Oakland when he was mayor of Oakland. So, yes, you are correct.
So if that wouldn't have happened, we wouldn't be discussing this today.
Absolutely. Right?
Correct.
So that's what really bothers me. Common sense in those politicians when they said certain agencies are not spending the money wisely. Instead of penalizing those agencies, they penalize everybody. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's what's so frustrating to me. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Common sense was not there with these politicians in Sacramento. Mm-hmm. They were looking for ways to generate that revenue for themselves for the projects instead of leaving us alone. Mm-hmm. So,
I think politics are very interesting because for quite a while after the demise of redevelopment agencies, there were bills being introduced that would bring back iterations of it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, politics are so cyclical, and so that's not the vogue anymore. Now the vogue is homeless policy and you name it, and redevelopment has been completely just forgotten about. And so that's why I think you're seeing this come forward finally now, because we're recognizing that there is not going to be a redevelopment 2.0 that's mm-hmm. created by the legislature. They have lost their desire to do that.
Wow.
So.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you.
Any other comments from the council? Questions? Any comments from the public on this issue? Seeing none, what is the council's prerogative?
So we're looking at what is
make a motion to
the long and short of it is we're requesting that you please adopt resolution 2019-101, which will allow us to issue bonds to refund the original RDA bonds. It will save $300,000 a year, of which roughly $46,000 will be savings for the city. The nice thing is by doing this refunding and providing the savings, the school district will see more money, the cemetery district will see more money, the county will see more money. Anybody who is a taxing entity in Fresno County that's part of us will actually benefit from these savings.
Right.
So
we're
we were
looking at savings.
Savings.
That's what it's all about.
Savings.
Yeah. Move to approve.
Second.
With
the amendments, yes.
Yes. That was requested by staff.
Right.
Council member Solino?
Yes.
Council member Beck?
Yes.
Council member Betancourt?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Fast?
Yes. Item 18, discuss, consider, and authorize submittal of argument to Fresno County Clerk Voter Services for voter pamphlet for Reedley transactions and use tax measure.
And I'll go ahead and take this, Mayor Pro Tem. As you know, the council has directed staff to move forward with putting a ballot item on the March ballot. I was about to say November, on the March ballot. You as voters recognize that you do get a county printed voter pamphlet, and that voter pamphlet generally has arguments, an argument for and an argument against each ballot measure. So the county did contact us to remind us that we should be submitting the argument in favor of the ballot measure since we are putting it forward. We do not have to do that. If we do not put an argument forward and somebody else does put an argument forward, one is selected. The agency putting the ballot measure forward gets priority. So if we do put this argument forward, ours will be the one selected. If we do not, then it's really any member of the public that submits the argument will be selected. We don't know, obviously, if there will be an argument against. That remains to be seen. How the county does that is they actually publish a notice in our local paper so that our community can understand that they do have an option to submit an argument against, and then the Fresno County Voter Services will select and prioritize the argument against. So we have drafted up a sample statement. It's a maximum word count of 300 words, which this does comply. I did have one council member suggest we add something about pensions being funded with this as well. So that's something that we want to ask the council if you would like to include that language in there. So what we'll do is we'll maneuver some words around because we have to stay within that 300 word limit. It does need to be signed by one of the council members, so generally that would come from the presiding officer, who is the mayor. So our suggestion would be that we have Mayor Pinon sign this document. So what we would be looking for tonight from council is discussion on this item, authorization to go ahead and submit the argument, and if the vote is to submit the argument, then any recommended changes necessary in the argument that you see before you.
Okay, are there any comments from the council?
No.
Did I miss
something? Well, I was the one that said I think we should put CalPERS pension funds in here because from my understanding, that's gonna be one of the big costs to our city, which is basically a cost from the past, but will really affect our bottom line and our general fund. Am I wrong in that assumption?
Well, just to chime in with the community polling that was done, the general message that was given to us from those contacted from the sampling of voters in the community was that they feel very strongly that the city needs additional money to just maintain where it's at. And public safety and streets maintenance were the two top priorities. Mm-hmm. And so as you can see, this argument reflects the viewpoints of the community about public safety and streets maintenance. Part of how we maintain all these services is that we do have to pay for employee benefits to be able to maintain these services. So we felt that this language and this argument reflected what the poll came back with and what we've been told. So that was kind of the thinking behind that. We also looked at some samplings from some other arguments from other cities. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know, the council's been briefed. We have literally hundreds of these measures are going forward in the state right now because of all of the funding impacts that all these cities are feeling. And so this was a very common way of explaining the ballot measure. It's not to say it's the only way to do it, and we could certainly make alterations. But we took three or four different samples that were successful, and this was a blending of those successful arguments. But again, that's not to say we can't make modifications.
So what we're doing is throwing out to the public that what we really want is to take care of the city. Now we're gonna add that to take care of the retirees?
Well, what we really want is to take care of the city, and I think what Ms. Fast is saying is, to be completely transparent, we need to add in that this money would also pay for pension payments, if I'm understanding correctly.
The financial forecast of the of the city as presented to the council over the summer paints a pretty dire picture for the city if this measure is not passed. This is one of the most difficult things I've ever done in my entire life, was to present that information to you and to carry this project all the way through. If I had a full head of hair at the start, I would have lost it, but I didn't have it to lose. But I'm sort of making light of a very dire situation for the city. So we're doing everything we can to be fully transparent about this measure, but we feel we've also been very transparent about the financial condition of the city as well. And so we're trying to have an argument that really reflects that we're trying to maintain these critical life services for the community, as well as fill a few potholes.
I do think in the second paragraph at the end of the very first, or the second sentence of the second paragraph, where we say cities facing increases in operating costs, including blah, 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 personnel, we could easily add and pension costs in that statement to be transparent, not hide anything, but also not tell the public that's all this money would pay for, because it's not. We certainly are going to spread these funds around.
Okay.
Well, and that's pretty obvious the way this is written, that's what you're going to do. But to me, it should include what's one of the main reasons that's causing this to be a problem, that we can't sustain ourselves. And it's the pension.
So the financial forecast did show that the pension was a driver, but it wasn't the only driver. In fact, our medical costs are also a big driver of it, as well as our liability, our workers' compensation. So that's why there is a statement in there about our liability insurance. We've seen average increases of 12% a year in our liability insurance. Our workers' comp has been up to 20% a year. So we've seen... and then a lot of our vendors, and that's why, it does list out some of the items, our contracted services, a lot of our private firms that service us, that provide services to us, they're passing along some big increases to us, as well as the minimum wage goes up and gas tax. So the SB1 fuel cost, we're getting a lot of fuel surcharges now, a lot of things passed on to us. And we did talk about personnel increases here. Not to great detail, because as city manager talked about, there was only 300 words to deal with here. This rings in at 297 words. So we tried to get the biggest bang for the buck for under 300 words and still get the message across, please vote for this. So that's why that was our problem, is that I couldn't write more than 300 words.
How about if you put on that second paragraph, contracted services, liability insurance, comma, pension funding? That would add two words.
Okay.
We can do that.
Okay.
That would be my suggestion.
Yes, and that would be at $299, so we still have room for one more word if anybody want to drop one in there.
You'll see.
That's more than one word.
Okay, is there any comment? Now I've said my piece. You guys say your piece.
No, I don't have any problems with the additional wording in there. It was pretty much explained when you mentioned personnel. You're talking about cost of the whole thing anyway. So, but I don't have a problem with the additional wording.
All right.
Other comments from the council? Any comments from the public on this issue? See none. What is the council's pleasure?
Can we make a motion to approve it?
Mm-hmm. I'll second.
With the change or with the addition?
With the addition. With
the addition? Isn't that what we wanted? Mm-hmm.
Councilmember Betancourt?
Yes.
Councilmember Beck?
Yes.
Councilmember Salino?
Okay.
Mayor Pro Tem
Just okay.
Yes.
Thank you, okay. Council.
Thank you, Paul.
Yes, thank you very much. I know it's a hard thing to.
Okay, item 19, brief reports by council members. I'll start with Mr. Beck.
Was I correct? I attended the Shine the Light Was that the domestic violence on down on
G Street?
Yes. Yeah. That was the domestic violence.
Yeah, yeah, and that I was really nice turnout for that being the first one, and I'm looking forward to that continuing. I would, you guys did a great job on that, Chief.
So, thanks, sir.
And also had COG. I'm going to speak on a little bit of near and dear to Rob's heart. We had a long discussion about VMT up there with the.
Can you tell us what those initials are?
Vehicle miles traveled. That means holding you to a certain area where you can't travel. So that's basically what it is. They want to raise it so expensive that you don't want to travel. And we're not like LA or San Francisco. We don't have mass transit here for public. And now the state is looking at the VMT, and it's something I think it's really going to become an issue. And I think it's already being, and I understand you had a nice conversation at the end. I appreciate your going after them like you did, Rob. Thank you.
So I have a question. So does that mean like they're going to put a monitor on my car?
No, let me, if you don't mind me explaining, yes. Mr. Beck,
I'll
just chime in that this has to do with environmental documents where currently if we're going to look at development of residential, commercial, industrial, we look at levels of service. For instance, what's the traffic pattern in creating a level of service at an intersection? Is it an A or is it a C, meaning a C, D, F, you're waiting longer at that intersection because we're adding traffic. Rather than looking at levels of service for those environmental documents, the state has passed a law that we have to look at vehicle miles traveled for those developments, which is virtually impossible, by the way, because when you build a housing development, you do not know where people are going to work, if they're going to work, where they're going. You don't know any of these things. Are they going to rent their place out? Who are they renting it to? So they've created this formula instead. And the formula is, we believe, very flawed. What we don't want to see is they move all development up to the metropolitan areas, but in fact that is exactly what they want to do, and they specified that to Rob. And what Mr. Beck was alluding to is Rob was on a conversation with HCD. He pulled out the Rob that we love and told them just flat out that they need to get their act together and talk to one another because they're giving us contradictory priorities, I would say. So that's what vehicle miles traveled for a VMT. You'll hear that a lot now because that's what's going to be in CEQA documents for developments. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
That's all I have.
Councilwoman, that was enough, she said.
Yeah.
Did you have any?
Nothing.
Okay.
I have none.
Ray?
Well, you were with the Korean group. Didn't you go to that?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. It was nice. I'll let you go ahead.
I attended the McDonald's opening. I was a little bit late, but I got to go on the tour, and they've done a lot of work here in Reedley on that McDonald's. And I talked to one of the managers there, and he said that they were redoing most of them in the state to make them more efficient and add more things that to try to start reducing the employee side of. They're making electronic where you can take your order electronically and that type of thing. So it'll be interesting to see as time goes on how many employees they end up. They put more employees, I think, in the back, but less in the front. Also attended the Korean group from Busan, South Korea, was here on the 23rd. And Dr. Kim from Fresno State is taking over or beginning to take over for Dr. Cha, who has now retired. So they will be our big contacts, and they do our interpreting for the group when they come. But there was a group of about 50 people that came, and most of them were businessmen and leaders in that city. Also attended the domestic violence day thing that you had on G Street, and thank you, Chief, for coordinating that, or whoever coordinated that. It was very well done, and I think it brings attention to something that's, you hate to say it, but takes place a lot in our community. And I know at the state level, they said that that's one of the number one things that officers in our state have to go to on calls, and probably one of the scariest calls also. So, yeah, I think it needs to be, have more attention to, for people to get help before they get into these hard situations. Also attended John Robertson's lunch, going away lunch, and that was very nice. Attended the Fall Family Fun Night at Reed-Lambie Church. It was a good group of people. Also attended the breakfast, President's Breakfast for Reedley College. Dr. Jerry Buckley is our new president for the college there. And he spoke, he and his group of staff people spoke about a lot of different things. The couple of things I pulled out of it, they were focusing on the high school students that attend the college that have the dual enrollment. And also that students struggle with finances to pay for college, and they're doing a lot more scholarships and funding of students to pay for their tuition, but they still have books, and then if they need a place to stay, they still have that to pay for. So there's a big need for more funding, according to the staff. I don't know that I agree with that. I think it's important that people pay their way, because then they make sure it's important that they go to school. But that's my opinion. Also, they had a concern of students that start college, but they don't finish. And I noticed they had almost 13,000 students, and only about 2,000 are completing their college two-year college degree or going on to a four-year college, and I thought that was pretty poor. And then they also talked about building projects that they have planned for the next couple of years. The heavy truck program, the science and engineering building, a performing arts center, and a child development center, which I found interesting. They had plans for this child development center in 1983 or four. It was like 25 or 30 years ago, long time ago. And they're finally gonna maybe do it. So we'll see. And yeah, it was a good morning. A lot of people came to that breakfast. And I think I spoke with our city manager that it's important that we support Reedley College, because they bring a lot of business to our community, a lot of people. And that's all that I had. Staff reports?
A couple of them. So let me start with the really good one, and that is last Friday was the summit in Fresno, the Economic Innovation Summit for California. The governor came down, was the keynote speaker. We were so pleased that Boeing staff came down with their flight simulators that they're going to be putting into the schools here in Reedley. And so we were able to stand together under a single banner with all of our logos together. So the governor, as he walked by, and literally he walked by us and talked with us about it, could hear Reedley and Boeing in lockstep. And so it was just fabulous. We will have some news for you very shortly within the next few weeks on where we're heading with this. But what I do want to add is these flight simulators, they're just so incredibly cool. And the Jefferson principal here in Reedley showed up at the Economic Summit in the morning on Friday. She didn't have to, but she recognized the value of this for our students, and she brought some elementary school students with her. And so as the governor was passing by, he got to see these nine-year-olds clamoring to get on these flight simulators and learn how to fly these planes. It was just an incredible visual, not to mention just incredible in and of itself, but it was neat to watch these kids so quickly learn elements of flight and be able to teach each other, oh, that's called the throttle, pull back on the throttle, do this, do that. It was just incredible. So I think we're really onto something here, and we'll talk more about that within the coming weeks. I know John is poised and ready to write an article, but we asked him to hold back just slightly so we can get some stuff going. Boeing actually is going to be in town again tomorrow installing one of the simulators in Jefferson School, and so we're kind of excited about that too. So that is good stuff that's happening. I don't want you to think everything out there is bad. There is good stuff happening. Other good stuff happening. Today, Senator Hurtado held a roundtable concerning water issues. She invited roughly 60 to 70 of us to attend, and she was really focusing on the administrators of agencies, which I appreciated, so that we could tell state water officials what we're experiencing. So in addition to the chairman of the State Water Resources Control Board, there was also the water consultant to the Senate pro tem, blah, 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 you know, big titled guy, and the governor's legislative secretary was there. And so we had an opportunity to talk about SB 998. We talked about unfunded mandates. What was really nice is there were 60 or 70 people in the room saying the same things about, you're asking us to put all these regulations on and to increase fees, but then our populations can't take these fees, they can't pay our bills, and then you turn around and pass SB 998 and we can't do anything about the bills that aren't paid. So it wasn't just Reedley talking about these issues. And it was neat to see the folks up on the dais really take note of some issues, and in particular the ones that Reedley brought forward and some other cities, was the fact that a big other agency was not in that room, and that is the housing agency, because we're being told on one hand implement SGMA, reduce your water use, and then build 3 million new housing units in California, which all need water. And it was neat to see the governor's legislative secretary stand up and say, they need to be in this room. We need to be talking to them. So I think that truly is something. There is no communication up at the state level. So whether it yields something productive at the state remains to be seen, but it was very nice of the senator to pull this together, and I think very good for all of us to be in the same room telling them the same story. It was pretty powerful this afternoon. So that was yet another good thing to talk about. And here's another bad one, and Mr. Beck, if you don't mind me talking about a COG issue, I don't want to steal your thunder on this.
Go.
So COG is recommending to the policy board at their next meeting that they increase the regional transportation mitigation fee. We call it the RTMF, and that's a fee that all development pays throughout Fresno County to pay for interchange work, anything that development puts a burden on in terms of the general transportation structure in Fresno County. We've had this fee for quite some time. My issue right now is that they are recommending an increase of 35% in this fee. So when we talk about we don't want to raise fees by 3% to our folk, they are recommending a 35% increase, which means for every housing unit that's developed, that's almost $500 in additional fee that's being proposed. It's a very arrogant statement for them to make that they don't believe this is going to cause any impact in rural development. It absolutely will cause an impact in rural development. And so only two votes against it, though, Reedley and San Joaquin. So this is something I think we need to pay attention to because this is urban Fresno Clovis not understanding the rural nature of development in the rural areas. So that is something I have some great concerns about, and Rob and I have just about lost our voices trying to tell them to pay attention to this, and we're not getting any response. So unfortunately, I do think that will pass at the COG board. But I do want to let you know that we did vote no for that. Do we have staff with updates?
Good evening, Council. Just wanted to let you know that this Thursday at the Planning Commission meeting, we will be having the first public meeting associated with the Farmland Preservation Program. As you remember, that is part of the general plan implementation, a program that we promised that we would put into place. We've had some great outreach up to this point with members of the ag community, both on the business side, on the farmer side. We're making sure that we're casting the net as wide as we possibly can, because it does have the potential to impact everyone, whether or not you're a farmer or an ag business related. So we just want to make sure that everybody has the opportunity to weigh in on the program. We think that it's going to be extremely low impact, the program itself, for what we're looking for. But regardless of that, we want to make sure that we have as much public input as possible. So that will be this Thursday, 5 p.m., as part of the Planning Commission meeting will be that workshop, the second half of the Planning Commission meeting. So if you have any questions about that, if you hear anything in the community and you want to direct people to us, by all means, please do so. Thank you.
So I thought I'd make an announcement on behalf of Sarah. She had to go home. She wasn't feeling well. Next Friday is the annual Thanksgiving potluck at the community center. I don't have the exact time, but it's around the noon. Okay, it's noon. So I'm not sure if you guys cook anything special, but if you would like to bring a dish, if not, don't worry about it. There'll be plenty of food there. So I just wanted to make sure that was on your calendars.
Thank you.
And you can RSVP through Sylvia, and as well this weekend is the Faith House inaugural banquet for their fundraising, and that will take place at the community center on Saturday, and you can RSVP through Sylvia for that as well. So.
This Saturday?
Yes, this Saturday.
I'll confirm with everybody, all the folks that did RSVP.
Yeah, and it is this coming Saturday. So, and that's all from staff, Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you. Okay, there's no other business. This meeting's adjourned, and thank you, staff, and
thank you very much.